debriefing the Undoing Racism, which we really had a chance to talk about at the end of the last meeting, and then talking about defining the guiding principles for this group as we move forward, group membership, how we encourage it, and what it means, and then our next steps for the September meeting and beyond, and then I'll ask for feedback. Our intent is to adjourn by 10 o'clock. So just in terms of getting started, introductions. My name is Jenny Laughlin. I'm an organizational development consultant at Applied Good, and as I say, provide practical support to nonprofits. That's what we do. I am delighted to be here, and the question for this morning is, what are you personally looking to get from your involvement with this task force? So I'll start by saying I'd like to get more training because I thought the Undoing Racism was terrific.
Okay, Kathy House, Executive Director of the Child Care Council of Westchester. You know, on a personal level, I'd just like to, you know, continue to unravel, you know, the impact my own very limited experiences when I was growing up have had, you know, on who I am today. You wanted a personal statement, right?
Yeah.
And this is for the training or
no? From their participation in this task force. Like everybody comes into a room with expectations, right? So I think there's a sense from when I spoke with Kathy and Catherine as the co-chairs of this task force. They're like, I want to make sure that people are getting what they want to from being part of this. You know, so you make a commitment to be here. So I think that the intent is just to. And make sure that you know your needs are considered as we construct future meetings.
So, Jenny, may I add something?
Sure. Okay.
Well, I'm not taking back what I just said, but in addition, you know, for this particular group, I mean, I hope I'll become a more involved person through this process, and I could be a more effective manager in my organization, a contributor. But I hope that as a group, we can come to some really bold and innovative and effective ideas that maybe we haven't previously.
I'm Catherine Borgia, County Legislator. My goals for being here have really evolved as a result of our first two meetings. So now my goals are very lofty because I do think that the sort of collection of people who are coming around this table is significant. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of talent, and I think that I would like for this task force to be a very significant player in improving the quality of life for families of Westchester. And I feel like we can do it because I feel like there's so much willingness and ability to work collaboratively here. So.
Okay, thank you, Liz.
I'm Liz Mark. I'm an advocate for both youth and for people with disabilities. And I have been to many of these types of gatherings for a gazillion years, and I'm looking for an aha moment.
Thank you. Melanie, do you want to weigh in?
I'm excited to see if we come out with some shared services at the end.
Christian Philemon, Executive Director of the Youth Shelter Program of Westchester. I'm here to understand services as they exist, to share what I've learned in my role, and to better advocate and create greater impact for the people that I serve.
Carla Horton. I run Hope Store, which is headquartered in Pleasantville. We do work on domestic violence, dating abuse, and hopefully prevention, although that remains to be seen. I'm here because the people that we serve really need to know about, the people that we work with every day, are connected to so many of you, because the people that we work with need child care, and they need health care, and sometimes they're coming out of shelter or going into shelters, or they need mental health services, and we're working in the Austin School District. So to me, there's strength in relationships, and strengthening relationships is important. I have a terrific team of people, and I want you to get to know them better. And should you ever decide that maybe we're not as great as I sometimes think we are, I would consider it a personal courtesy if you would let me know so that I could do what I need to do so that we're as good as we need to be, because people's lives depend on what we do and have to do it well.
Hello, my name is Angela White. I'm the assistant superintendent of the Austin School District, and I am here at the request of the superintendent, Ray Sanchez. What I am hoping to get today is a great understanding of the committee, the goals of this committee, because I know that there are many families, not just in Austin, but many families in Westchester that are struggling. The face of poverty has changed drastically over the last few years. And so it's my hope that this committee have very realistic goals that you can work on, not just discuss, but that you can work on, develop an action plan, and then implement. So that everyone can understand the value of this committee. Because I think to have a committee that's just focusing on families is very important, but it's even more important that your goals and your action plan become reality for the families that need this committee.
Thank you. That's our goal, too.
Sarah Yergo from Westchester Children's Association. Building on what Angela said, something similar, I definitely think that this would be is a great chance for everybody to come together and share ideas and come up with some great new ideas for children and families in Westchester. And I think it is really important to have action steps come out of it. And that's what I would really be looking for and hope that we can come to.
I'm Susan Shefflin. I'm the Senior Vice President for Community Impact for United Way of Westchester and Putnam. And I know that we've worked with many of you in many different ways over time. When I heard about this committee, I very much wanted to be on it because I thought, okay, now we're going to get it at the government level and we're going to start, tying this all together and making something happen in the community. I, as Catherine, changed after the undoing racism element came into it. I feel very strongly at having, and then I went and took the undoing racism thing because I didn't know if we were going to be able to have it here. Mm-hmm. It is an intensive 3-day program in which they don't allow you not to participate in all 3 days. If you can't be in all 3 days, they don't let you participate because you have to move through every emotional, legal moment of our history from the beginning of this country right up to the present time to understand why privilege and the color of your skin is so crucial to everything that happens. So now my goal with this committee is that I hope that we can all, working together, do something to make some changes, because I don't see very many changes being made, even though we say they're being made, I don't think they're being made, and I think we could have the power together, and I believe in working together, because I think that's the only way anything ever happens, is working together to make those changes.
Hi, I'm Jan Fisher from WJCS. So I originally came because Catherine and Kathy asked me to. The truth be told. And I really didn't know, I just thought, another task. And I was really thrilled on the first day that we went around and had a really open and honest conversation. And I think what did result was an understanding that it would be really beneficial for this group to have a common perspective and a common language. And I think that was, I think taking on undoing racism was a very, very bold move and a swift move for this committee, and I was really impressed. We have done this at our agency many, many years ago and formed an undoing racism committee, and it really, really has helped. From the CEO down, We grasped this initiative, and it became a lens for us in delivering programs, in how we deal with our clients, so to speak. We don't even call them clients now, but our whole perspective in working in all the communities in Westchester was it has been and is still constantly evolving and being formed by undoing racism. So I think this is a really important lens for this committee. But beyond that, you know, I'm hoping that the aha moment, I'm hoping that we, through this, can do something new and different as a coalition. You know, you go, we're all members of a gazillion task forces, and what happens is everybody in that room feels that they have to be the strongest advocate for their particular service or their particular position. And while I am here to push the mental health agenda forward, because it has been so stigmatized and it has been something nobody wants to talk about or understand how important mental health is to overall health, I also realize that I have a lot to learn from the people in the room, and I think we may come up with that aha moment or that one particular issue or activity that we could all push forward together. So, why I'm here now.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Jeff.
Hi, I'm Frank Williams, Director of the City of White Plains Youth Bureau. For me personally, the face of family has changed over time. I grew up at a time where there was extended family, the uncle, the cousin, the neighbor, the people that you were connected with next door, and so we live in really different times. So the face of families has changed drastically over time. We have younger mothers who are raising kids by themselves, single-parent mothers who are struggling just to keep bread on the table, and then families are impacted because of lack of housing, lack of jobs, the issues of mental health that you just mentioned, and needing access to a variety of different kinds of services. And we work with thousands and thousands of parents, and they're always knocking at the door, calling on the phone, how can we get help? So in part, families really don't know what the services are that are available. We live in kind of a United Nations community with Hispanic from all over the world who live in our area. We have immigrants from the Caribbean. We have African Americans who still have not been able to realize the American dream. So a lot of our families really don't have hope, and the lack of hope is being filtered down to their children in terms of opportunity or lack of opportunity there is. And then the other issue that is so important to me is education. How do we help our community, mothers or fathers who dropped out of school, get back in the race and continue with their education? Yesterday I went to a funeral of a mother in our church, and she got her college degree. She finished getting her college degree at 78 years of age. So how do we help people say that education is important, and just because you dropped out of school doesn't mean that your life is over? And then how do we help to encourage kids to see their mothers and fathers who have the ability to realize their full potential? So there's a lot of that kind of stuff.
Right. Sorry. The question is one thing that you introduced yourself, and one thing that you are looking to get from your participation in the task force.
And I thought that's really great. Sally Baker, Executive Director of Girls Inc. for Westchester County. I am delighted to be a part of this task force. This is the first task force kind of involvement for myself and Girls Inc. Westchester. I agree with everything that has been said. I think looking through the lens of undoing racism is absolutely necessary, and I really like that as a kind of requirement for the group, so we are all come to it both challenged and pushing our, realizing that, okay, this is different. It's going to require a different perspective and a unified understanding of the lens that we want to look through this. And I think the idea, we are all so busy with our own agenda, our own organizational goals, and I really like the idea of a collaboration that brings us together to look above our own institutional agenda bringing the different perspectives. I think hearing the different perspectives are fabulous, and I love the fact that everybody comes to the table saying, this is, you know, this is what I bring, mental illness, this is my particular focus. However, I want to be able to once we understand the different realities that the different agencies are working with, the major issues that they see, then where's that commonality in terms of the, what is uniting, what is similar about the families that we're serving that needs to be addressed at a meta level, that, we don't often have the luxury of stepping outside and thinking and working together on something bigger like that. So I'm really excited about that, and also what other people said about having real specific action items, because if it's too big, it's not going to get done. But realistic goals for what is this committee going to be able to accomplish in the period of time that we have.
Okay, I'm Barbara Finkelstein. I'm the CEO of Legal Services of the Hudson Valley. And although we started in Westchester as a Westchester organization, we're now in seven counties in the Hudson Valley with eight offices, and which has taken me somewhat out of Westchester County. And when I got the email from Melanie, I actually was very excited because I thought this would be something great, that I can work on something, excuse me, in Westchester County that's really important to the organization. And I didn't so much think of me, but you know, when I think of Legal Services of the Hudson Valley, I think, and I've worked with many of you around the table, or people in my office have, how important legal services is as an umbrella piece to everything that everyone's doing, and how important it is for us to be at the table so we can work with everybody. And we don't see legal services as like the end game, but the means to the end, mm-hmm. like to the child care, to the affordable housing, to the education, to everything everybody said around here, and we just want to participate. So I think it's exciting that, you know, I can be here. But this morning I was thinking, actually it's interesting, why do I want to be here? And I live in Westchester County, and I really was thinking about this morning, you know, we all work so hard, and all we do is work, but what is it that's meaningful to me? I didn't grow up in Westchester, I grew up in the city. So you think, you know, that's a whole other thing, but being here, recognizing that Westchester has the same kinds of problems, what do I want to do? I want to be part of something that, you know, and Catherine said it's something significant. I want to be, when I'm not, you know, director at Legal Services of the Hudson Valley, involved in something here that helps to bring about change, because I think things have gotten worse. Mm-hmm. We all see things getting worse, and that's bad, you know, and I want to participate in something that can make changes in Westchester County and improve the lives of the families in Westchester County.
Hi, I'm Donna Bastero, Executive Director of CHOP, which is Caring for the Homeless of Pisco and Northern Westchester. So we actually see, I would say, because we have a shelter, transitional shelter, we have a VA dorm shelter, we also have an overnight emergency. We have a choice with pantry and a soup kitchen. So I would say I see the results of perhaps the issues that are being raised around this table on the back. Okay, so we have we service male and female 18 and above. And then at our choice with pantry and soup kitchen, we have families, we have kids, we have seniors, disabled, and the whole gamut. So from a professional perspective, and thank you, Christian, for inviting me. I was part of the Leadership Westchester with Christian, and I absolutely think that Christian is one of the most interesting. So I'm present to try to first understand what the task force is trying to accomplish, and to see whether my goals fit in with that, but certainly from, I have two goals, one from a professional perspective, a goal to try to preclude or prevent what is coming to me on the back end. Mm-hmm. So what's coming to me on the back end is broken people, broken individuals and broken families who are struggling every day to find themselves. We have an enormous amount of mental health underlying substance abuse issues. Westchester County and I believe the country refuses to come to terms with the amount of mental health that individuals and families are suffering, which are creating a pattern in this county as well as around the country of disability in the sense both mental and physical disabilities preventing independent living, and barriers exist as a result of the underlying causes that are driving the huge amount of substance abuse and a huge amount of wasted time in jails where these folks could be very much doing productive activities in society where they can once again feel whole. You know, by the time they get to us, it is very difficult for us to try to not only get them housed, because there's still an ingrained prejudice for folks that have had criminal activity resulting from substance abuse, resulting from mental health, resulting from broken families. So there's a circular pattern, I think, that exists in this country which we have refused to acknowledge and still refuse to acknowledge, that this is ongoing, that the folks that are suffering from substance abuse are also suffering from mental health, and the reasons that are driving that substance abuse. I've got in my shelter currently a young man that's 18, but 10th grade in the hospital school, who I've been desperately trying to help. Unfortunately, it's going the other way at the moment. But I think that that's for a professional reason. I would like to see action that finally addresses the underlying reasons why this is a continuing, escalating problem and a circular one and a continuing pattern in this country, which every day Westchester County folks refuse to acknowledge. And I think it's a larger issue in the country. I think as Americans we refuse to acknowledge that we have a huge problem with mental health that's driven by a number of issues, one of them racism for sure, is my belief, but a whole host of issues that starts in the family where families are unable to move forward in a productive way. So I think that that's certainly a professional reason why I'm here. And I believe in networking, and I certainly believe that in Westchester County, with the number of nonprofits we have, I'm also trying to still get a handle on the overlapping work that we're all doing, that we may be able to come together in a more powerful and more productive way. So that's a professional. On a personal level, undertaking the Westchester Leadership Course, I'm an attorney by trade, and have attended numerous leadership courses, but in Westchester Leadership, I think there was a much more focused drive to figure out internally what is driving you as a leader, or trying to drive you as a leader, and to think about it. And on a personal level, I've got mental health in the family, for sure, and I think that that's driving me. People have told me I'm mental health myself, on an ADD level. But I think that from a personal level, I have experienced and would like to understand better how we can help fulfill the potential, especially I think of girls, but also of boys, where the focus in our schools is misplaced in terms of motivating children's minds so that they too can find their inner potential and their mission in life. And I would like to explore, and I'll be calling you, Kevin, to see it, to understand a little bit better from a legislative perspective how to explore this, but I would like to explore how we can institute in schools or in younger learnings, the younger learning environment, mission-driven, personal achievement, personal inner potential focus as part of a formalized curriculum. I believe that that would help to eliminate some of the paths that are taken that then circularly come back to the, me and the shelter perspective. So I'd like to be able to report that.
Thank you.
Ginny, Carolyn just came in.
Hi, Carolyn.
It's kind of bad to ask you to answer question one.
Carolyn, the task of to introduce themselves and give one reason why they, for that one expectation they have of being part of the task force, one reason.
Well, I'm Carolyn Flickinger, and I'm the director of the Kinship Support Program for people that are raising grandchildren and other relative children at the Family Service Society of Yonkers. And my goal is to see that these families get on the agenda of different organizations and task force, because they are either they're forgotten or others are not aware of them. And they have, the ones that we see have many of the problems of low income families. Not to say that people with low incomes necessarily have problems, but they struggle to make ends meet. The caregivers often have just enough money for themselves, and then they find themselves raising children, and some are raising multiple children, and the system is really not geared to serve them well. And most of them are outside of the foster care system.
Sure, so making people aware of.
Frank and I were just noticing, or just talking about, there's nobody Hispanic at this table.
Right, we're actually going to do that.
Group membership. Yeah. It's right on the agenda right here. Yeah,
but not just from a Hispanic organization,
no.
But a Hispanic person from a Hispanic organization.
Yeah, right. I think we'll identify some gaps in committee members, task force members.
Folks have been invited.
Yes,
that's true. Ginny, could I just say three points of information before we move on?
Yes.
One is everyone has the Undoing Racism schedule in your little packet, so please do take advantage of whatever days that you can go to do the more intensive training. I think everyone around the table who testified to have taken it felt it was very useful.
If you could clarify, I missed the last meeting.
Okay.
Are these workshops open to anyone at this table?
We believe that they are from the last session.
Yeah.
I was talking in an informal group about one of the impediments that Melanie and I came across when we were trying to create an undoing semi-workshop for us here at the council was that they did say that there was a charge. However, the DSS people who were here who gave us our little mini workshop seemed to indicate that members of the task force, and you should identify yourselves as such, can jump into any of these trainings as sort of internal.
At no charge.
I believe that it's at no charge.
But my next question is it just if we're a member of the task force, or does this extend as well to members of our organization?
I believe that brings me beautifully, Carla, to my second point, which is that if you know of people who might be interested in working with us, this is an open group. So please do continue. Thank you, Christian. Please do continue to invite people, and I believe that you represent your organization, and therefore they are also members of the task force.
I took the 3 days and just found it enormously valuable. Would love to send others.
Great.
All
right. So,
Catherine, you have 3. That's 2.
I know. You know what? I've forgotten my 3rd.
Okay.
No comments.
Moment. We're looking for a hot moment, not a moment.
Okay. If it occurs to you, just interrupt. Just again, to review quickly the purpose of today's meeting, we want to get to debriefing the Undoing Racism training and sort of identify guiding principles for this group as a result of that. And then the first part of, I think, meets with some of these goals in terms of getting this group set up for future action is to establish some guiding principles for us as a group, and in the next meeting we'll be specifically getting down to how are we going to organize for future action. So this is the lining up for action, and the next meeting will be more directly focused on action steps. So with that in mind, let's talk about undoing racism. We had asked during the gathering time for people to put up some thoughts about what's still in their mind from the undoing racism training, and we had some input here. which I'm sure some of the writing is larger than others. My own very limited exposure to other cultures, religions, races, ethnic groups, etc., growing up was still in mind as a result of the training. One person wrote, what are my cultural assumptions that I bring to interactions? History of words and their meaning. The way we continue after 150 years to keep putting everything under the carpet, pretending it's not happening. And the signs of entering low-income neighborhoods and what the meaning of different names we give each hold.
We give each what?
Give each hold. So there was a point where we were, like, when you go into a neighborhood, what's it called? That was a part of the
oh, as in, this is my neighborhood, this is my hood?
No, this is, well, what does it mean when you say called a barrio or, okay. or a...
So
there was an interesting piece on, you know, again, sort of related a little bit to the history of words and their meaning. Other thoughts as a result of that training? People talk about how meaningful it was for them, came up a couple of times in terms of its importance guiding our work going forward. Jen?
I think the importance of taking all that and thinking about how we make systemic change through our individual awareness and also understanding the barriers that have prevented, you know, when I did the Undoing Racism a number of years ago, just remembering our own history, redlining in certain communities and other things that have systemically kept people subjugated, groups of people subjugated.
I think this is related also to the history of words and meaning, but when we're having the discussion about the words that we use in proposals and grants and high need, high risk, and how that's not how a community would categorize themselves.
That's really important.
Yeah.
I talk a lot, so that was really an important one, because one of my mentors at WJCS, who doesn't work there anymore, said to me when she was reviewing a proposal I wrote, she said, I want you to put yourself in the place of the person in the neighborhood that you are writing about.
Yeah.
And see how they would feel reading that. And instead of saying high needs, maybe talk about high potential, incredible opportunity, and really put yourself in that perspective.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to capture this concept necessarily, but I'm one of the things that's a repeated also pattern in this country is the desert concept that exists in the neighborhoods for those folks that are facing systemic, you know, racism issues, and it does involve and correlate to and link to. The wide availability and what I would say fostering of pushing upon in those communities of drugs and alcohol and the lack of real care or real focused solution-oriented ways of preventing those communities when those children are growing up from being subject to the push of the drugs and the alcohol, where I don't think that the, I see the back end when the police are enforcing it all, but I don't see the front end when we're actually trying to get in there and making it preclusive to those communities, where we're focused on making sure that those communities are not ignored in terms of the concept of preclusiveness the way that it would be in other communities. So in upper middle class white communities, there is not this concept that it's just there and it's going to be there. It's not. There's action taken to prevent a lot of that, and I think that's missing, and I think that's part of undoing racism, not accepting that that's okay to have violence in those communities, to have
kind of what do you expect?
Right, what do you,
what
I mean,
you expect?
Yeah, because, I mean, I actually have to undo the concept in the minds of my, whether we call them clients or those that I'm helping every day, to accept that that's just part of their community, that they're thought of as, you know, drug addicts, or that they're thought
but
of.
But juxtapose that with the arrest levels.
Exactly.
In that community versus the non-erotic levels.
That's exactly my point, is that I'm going to ask on the back end.
I'm sorry. I'm going to ask not to go down that route, because we're not going to, the point here is to like take away, what are the takeaway concepts from this particular training, because we're hoping to get to guiding principles that we want to take away. So I don't mean to cut you off, it's an important issue, but the goal today is trying to establish guiding principles, not solving that particular problem. So. Any other thoughts on the training?
I have one more thought from the Undoing Racism. My aha moment was when we talked about the immigrants and the borders. And why is it that from Canada, there are no walls, there are no problems, there are no guys standing with guns and waiting, versus in the Mexico border, there's all this force and this violence and... And that was my aha moment in terms of color, because the people coming across the border in the north are white, and the people coming across the border in the south are another color. It just opened my brain to the whole process and pattern of behavior in this country. So it's a systemic thing that's underlying everything.
Other thoughts about takeaways from the training?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this during the training, and it's been on my mind since, which is that our little taste of the training was very interesting, and I definitely want to take the 3 days. But one of the things that came up that I thought was that was relevant to me, I come from an immigrant family, and there's a sort of in my family in particular, there's sort of knowledge of the opportunities that have happened to us in each subsequent generation. And there's a lot of things that happen to immigrants in our family history, our family lore, that, you know, that in our retelling, it's a heroic tale, right? So...
Good to know.
But and there's where I'm going with this is a lot of so during the training, I think a lot of us had experiences where we recognized pieces of it, and you know we said, this is like the persecution of the Jews, or this is like what happened to the Irish, or this is like what happened to my family from X place, but that and that is good. It's good to have that common human experience where, you know, we have a lot of commonality. But what struck me about the Undoing Racism training was that there is a difference. There is a difference between, and you touched on it a little bit, there is a difference between how the experience of slavery has shaped United States history. And then just a very short anecdote. Janice isn't here. We go to the same hairdresser. That's how I met her. But... I was having a discussion with our hairdresser, who is a woman of, from an Italian family, and she's married to a black man, and they had a fire in their house, and she was telling me this story about the process of recouping the value of their belongings from insurance, and she was saying how her husband was, you know, that burden was falling on her, and she was so mad at him because he kept challenging everything. She would write down about, you know, our TV is worth X dollars or whatever it was. And finally, they had this conversation where she said to him, you're supposed to put in a high replacement value. That's what they're expecting. And he said to her something that was so revealing to her. She said, I was raised to believe that the institution is right. And she in the course of telling me this story, and she was aggravated because it was a fight she was having with her husband, right? So she was telling me in the context of just girlfriends talking, right? And she said, you know, Catherine, slavery just ended, you know, as the context of her husband's behavior. And she's like, and his mother always thinks the white person is right. I'm the only white person that they think is wrong, which I thought was funny, too. You know, which maybe is how you break down some of these barriers, intermarriage. People to people, right?
Yeah.
No matter where you go. Other thoughts about the training?
Well, I think it sits with you, and I think it comes in pieces, and you become very reflective as you buy into listening to the kinds of things that were being said, and you think of yourself as not being a certain type of
person, and then all of a sudden, a behavior is there, and you go, oh my gosh, I never looked at it like that. And I think that is the value for me that I've really brought out of it. I mean, a lot of this we all sort of know, but I think that when you personalize it, I mean, I thought it was heavy. I think it really sits with you, and I think it's like when you see a really good movie, and you leave and you say, that was really good, but then you think about it, and then you rethink about it. And it's that kind of thing for me that has stayed. And I think it probably always will, by the way.
Yeah. I think that's a great segue into the next part of it, which I think, you know, is the, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about what guiding principles we want for this task force as a result of the training. And I think the reason I like your point, Liz, as a segue is that, you know, those things may get added to over time, because there are certain things I find the same thing, you know, that having done that small training in the last meeting, and I'll drive along and I'll see something and I'll trigger a thought back to oh, you know. So, you know, I think that'll, you know, stay open to that experience. Keep feeding back to us, you know, ways in which you'd like to incorporate things you've learned or aha moments that you've had as a result of that training. Guiding principles that we'll establish this morning can always be added to. So I think that's a great way to think about the guiding principles conversation that we'll have. Anything? Let's stop for a second. I'm sorry, do we have to join us at the table? Great, thank you. And if you could just give us your name.
I'm Joseph Amato, I work for Kappa.
Great, thanks. before we get into guiding principles, I'd like to just do a... Oh,
I remember. Oh, what the...
Okay.
Thank you, Joe.
It's a good example of what we can do here is the fact that we passed the intergenerational resolution at our last board meeting.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So one of the things that we can do in this committee is that we can verbal up ideas for policy-related legislation that can impact Westchester County programs. So a lot of the intergenerational advocates came to us and said, we'd like to have a resolution that will require every program that we do in Westchester County to think about whether or not there's an intergenerational component and devote some resources to the intergenerational component. And here's the very surprising thing, it passed 17-0.
It's a human issue.
Talk. I know, but
amazing.
But usually, what happens is there's like, it's nice, but.
That's very helpful.
Yeah,
that's very helpful.
Okay. Can I just add that I think in cases like that, it's really incumbent upon us to take the legislation, or us being the big us, the legislation a step further, because when you require people and agencies to do something and they do it rotely, it doesn't really become integrated into their mindset unless you educate them to the benefits of intergenerational programming, even bullet points about why this can help your agency and your constituency and your clients. Not just telling people they have to do it, but tell the why of
Jana, obviously I don't disagree with that,
right.
But there is a component that says, there is a component that says the governing body of this county values this as,
that's
as a goal.
That's
Was it defined? Did you define what you mean?
We did define it.
Sorry. We'll talk offline.
You know what?
We talked about that.
This will be something that we send around.
That'll be great. Yeah. Guiding principles, being that I'm an organizational development consultant, you know that probably from your work with them over time that we always like to do exercises and give you, but given the time of day and the time we have for the meeting, I'm not going to have you actually do the exercise, but I'm going to go through a visualization with you. Okay, so I'm going to start with this world map, and I'm going to give you each $50,000 and 3 months off, and I'd like you to think about where you go, what you do, how you get there, how you spend the money. Just sort of think about that for a couple seconds. $50,000, 3 months. Starting New York City. Fun? thing about what you do? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I'm going to ask you virtually, not in reality, to divide randomly by color. I'm going to give you each a color dot, and you're going to, the oranges are going to go over here, and the greens are going to go over here, and the blues are going to go over here, and you're going to, as a group, each have the same, you know, trying to come up with a task. You have $50,000 each. You have 3 months. And as a group, you're going to come up with one plan. It defines where you're going to go, how you're going to spend the money, what you're going to do when you get there, how you're going to travel. And think about how those conversations typically go. As much fun as being there on your own and thinking about it?
No, harder.
Harder. Okay. Nice big world. What makes it... Wow. I forgot that we filled this up. What makes it harder?
Because maybe you can't do what you want.
Yeah, that's for this.
Everybody else is going to have a different idea of what's important.
And now you have to kind of justify where you want to go, which when I was just me and it seemed very self-indulgent, I was okay with that. You can find me in the south of France, by the way.
I'm sorry, miss something. Don't get what you want. Need to justify there was something in the middle.
I think there's power in numbers, so I would prefer to be with the group.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. Because that would be, that's going to be the other question. What makes it more fun for those people?
So
one of the challenges, you know, defining purpose.
Yeah, I think also just kind of tied to that is also competing resources. So, like mine would be, I would like to set up a micro lending in some country in Africa where women's cottage industries could flourish, right? But, you know, your idea sounds good too. How would you put our money?
So competing resources is another challenge of working in groups.
I was going to say, I think it's better to work in groups because even if you want to do something on your own, you can still do something on your own. And there's just, there is, as Liz said, more power in numbers and more safety in numbers and more resources in numbers.
Catherine and I are going to empower women in the Middle East.
I like the plan. Okay, other challenges, other positives about working in a group?
Well, everybody needs to have the same mission, or it seems to me that if there are competing missions and you want to empower somebody else other than the women in Africa or the Middle East.
Right.
And you can go
to that group.
What, maybe you can go with that group. But what about my idea of the mission? What's going to happen to that? So.
Okay. So I think we've got some commonalities here, and I think, you know, typically in my experience, you put people in a group and you have 10 minutes to decide how you're going to spend, you know, $50,000 each in 3 months over time, and a lot of people are talking and a couple of people are sitting back and they're not heard, and all of a sudden somebody says, okay, I think we should vote, and the decision is made, and you come forward and some people are like, well, who got to decide? And I never was heard. And who decided on the decision-making mechanism? Because I sort of thought we were going to come to consensus, and I don't know, know, we didn't come up with any action steps. And so you, typically in an exercise like that, you know, I think we get our enthusiasms are brought in, but they're not really particularly well organized and directed, right? And that's the point of having guiding principles, is that they help to define the purpose. They help to define the way we're going to interact with each other, so to make sure that everybody at the table gets heard. They identify a decision-making mechanism, so that we all have a common expectation as to how the decision is going to be made, and an understanding, you know, we're going to coalesce around mission and purpose and next steps. On the other hand, it is really exciting, and that's the power of being in a task force, right, to have power in numbers, you know, the safety of having a group voice and the combination of resources and attributes and skill sets makes a group like this really powerful. So there are, you know, I think the what we want to do is to line these things up to the greatest effect by having guiding principles and goals and objectives we'll talk about at the next meeting, as I said. So let's go back to the guiding principles that would help that group conversation and help you identify the purpose and mission. And we'll start again with, you know, I think this is the common language at this point, is to say, you know, are there particular guiding principles from undoing racism that we want to have as part of this group's way of working together? I'll feed a couple, we'll see how they go. It is early morning on Friday in the summer. Words and meaning. I think, you know, sometimes in a group like this, we talk about terms and we have a term and it's not defined in different people. I was talking with Kathy and Catherine about this. You know, even something as fundamental to this group as what's a family? You know, what's our common definition of family? So I think, not that we're going to define that today, that'll actually be part of the September meeting, but I think it's important to define important terms. Mm-hmm. How's that for guiding principles? There are also procedural ones. You want to throw those in? Those are usually like usually when I ask this question, it's usually the first thing that comes up.
Everyone has a voice.
Good.
Yeah, and I was going to add on that. Because I think that the thing for me is that each person has value and worth.
Something else along the lines of, for those of us who are very fast to share our opinions, slowing down enough so that those who might need more time to reflect and articulate have the chance to do that without feeling like, well, the rest of us are doing this.
And listening.
Yeah, I'm
not
listening
talking when other people are talking. I went on I went to the Garrison Institute, and that was an exercise. We had to listen to somebody tell us something for 10 minutes and we couldn't talk.
it's
for you.
It's a really interesting exercise. Yes. I've said that also. So it's listening. And I think one of the things that, you know, that I, you know, might suggest adding to that is listening for meaning, because I think sometimes, you know, particularly as you're all in similar or intersecting services, sometimes, you know, there might be in groups like this a tendency to go, oh, I know where that's going to go. But stay curious, I guess, is, you know, like, would be an adjunct.
I love that. Then we had to get questions after, so we had to really listen.
Right.
Yeah, I think something important that I think started the conversation about undoing racism is that we have to create an environment where we are able to have those difficult conversations and ask those really important but difficult questions, even if we can't come up with an answer, to stimulate the discussion. I think that's important.
Or how about hearing the answer and not really liking it, but really needing to get it out there on the table anyway?
So asking and listening to.
Hearing the difficult.
Yeah. Hearing, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's more of being able to have those courageous conversations about topics that may seem uncomfortable for us.
Exactly.
And take us out of our comfort zone.
but are necessary in order to move forward.
So creating an environment for hearing and asking difficult, courageous, uncomfortable issues and questions.
Being non-judgmental.
Okay.
And non-defensive.
Yes.
Because I think sometimes
yes.
Your emotional reaction.
I got that was a big thing that benefited me from undoing racism is I think when I walked out of the breathing training, I was still very defensive, but I think over time, and this is years, you become less and less defensive about your own particular position. That's a process.
Was
for me anyway, it was a really long process.
Yeah. I wanted to add something that might come out as sounding like it's not supportive, and I don't mean it that way. I do hope that we will be at a place where we though can kind of push each other in our thinking and give each other feedback if we appear to be maybe not being bold enough or innovative enough. Or do you know what I mean? Just in a way to kind of respectfully, lovingly challenge each other, perhaps to look at things differently. Does that make sense?
No, I'm not quite sure what you mean. What do you mean? we're honest enough to push each other if we don't feel like we're getting where we need to get.
Yes.
I think it goes to somebody in their expectations of the group talked about. You know, I want to hear if we're not doing what we're intending to do by others in the room. I think that's an example of that, and also.
And thank you for that question, Susan.
Great.
Yeah.
Other guiding principles that people want to see incorporated into this group.
That we try to be non-territorial, and we all have our own realms of influence, and I don't know, just open that up and. Mm-hmm. Try not to be in our little silos and get out of our silos and get up and get the eagle's perspective.
I was thinking, I think Sally, you had mentioned that as one of your goals for the group also, and a lot of people have talked about, finding common ground and togetherness. And I was thinking about this in preparation for this meeting, and I was sort of like, okay, maybe for this group, having the individual here, our organizations here, and Westchester families, here somewhere, might be a useful paradigm for this group. To find that common ground.
Yeah, that's our logo.
Great. Logo design. My skill set. Other thoughts?
Well, Jeannie, I don't know if you're going to consider this a process or a procedural thing, but I do think for the it would be helpful for folks to kind of stay engaged in between meetings too. So if there's information coming out or whatever, so that when people are here, you're feeling like you're here and you're prepared, and there's a sense of continuity.
Engaged between meetings.
Sent out as a corollary to that is. Email listserv for everybody in the group?
No, but we can certainly do that.
That would be
we were talking about it.
I'm not going to pick up the phone and call, but I can email.
No, email, definitely.
But
we were also talking, one of the things, because we all have that organizational bias, natural organizational bias from our professional lives, that one of the things maybe we can do instead of doing it at the table here, but because we all want to know what everyone is doing, is being very consistent about sending out to the Google Doc, Google Drive, or whatever we're gonna, whatever we're gonna send out, updates about our own organization, so that we can come, sort of knowing what everyone else is doing. So this is not like an update meeting; it's more like an idea meeting. So to kind of.
And also in that
execution,
could be things like, I saw this movie, I think you'd all be interested, or I read this article, this would be a resource sharing tool as well, if somebody had mentioned sharing.
Like Leadership Westchester, how that happens naturally, so,
Great, other thoughts about principles for this group? I think implied in this is staying engaged between meetings also implies an attendance at meetings. Sorry, it's just kind of like a natural corollary.
Yeah, thanks.
Show the hell up.
Attend, show up. Come on down. Right here.
That's okay.
Come join us.
There's a spot.
Oh, that's right. Right next to Catherine. There's a chair right there.
I guess that meant worked for everybody. That's
sorry, I got it.
Yeah, obviously that wasn't working.
That one's not working? If you could just give us your name.
Alfreda Williams.
Alfreda, great, thank you. If you just put your name on the, oh, sorry, there's actually a marker right there. Maybe some people can see it. Thank you. We're just talking about guiding principles for this task force going forward. One of the objectives for today.
Could I just ask for patient understanding? To go back to what we were. Because we're going to make mistakes. We're going to say and do things that somebody else is going to go, I cannot believe it came out of her mouth. You know, but
but I think that there's a patient understanding of you.
You know, to help move me along and not put me in that defense. I'm getting very personal here.
Yeah.
It's me. I think I'm the one.
But, you know, that's a good corollary to the non-judgmental, non-defensive.
That we bring each other along.
And I think it's, you know, it's sort of a make an assumption that people are coming from an authentic and good place in themselves, even if it's not, you know.
Frank already said it, you know, value and worth of everybody at the table.
Yeah.
I think that really says it.
Jeannie, can I ask a clarifying question here? And I should know this, but I don't. Were we going to talk today about a decision-making process? Or
that's
that
part of the first
one?
Part. That's the first part of the next meeting.
Got it. Okay.
That was what we talked about.
Yeah.
Okay. Agenda creation.
I said I should remember. No, that's okay. You can't remember it.
It's okay. I'll keep track of that. Okay. So I had a couple of, knowing that it was early Friday in the summer, I had a couple of, I seeded this with a couple of possibilities. And now we can see whether we want to add any of them. Actually, before we do that, let's go back and make sure that in terms of expectations, are we, is there anything from, I mean, commonality, is a corollary here? So seek common ground, how's that for, that came up a number of times.
Maybe
drive for action
or
something. Okay, great. Anything else from the expectations of the group that we should bring up?
Can I just, Jen? In the process of being non-territorial, I just always get nervous that we're looking so much to be so collaborative that when we say non-territorial, we might lose the expertise that each individual and each individual agency brings to the table.
About share expertise.
Right, so I think in some ways we do have to be territorial, but only in a way that's going to benefit the whole group, rather than just pushing our own agenda forward, is understanding what expertise is relevant and when to speak and when to be quiet and when to listen, and but not to abandon the individual perspective that brings us all to the table.
Share expertise openly for group benefit.
I think what I meant by that non-territorial was not that you wouldn't share your mental health expertise or your domestic violence expertise or whatever expertise, but that you wouldn't, or your legal expertise, but that you wouldn't, that would become the whole.
Right.
That it somehow would all meld together. So it's just, you know, let's not go down one path. If we could think systemically across the whole realms, what is the systemic way of looking at this? So you mentioned about the roots of the problem, getting to the roots of the problem. From a systemic point of view, how can we work at it?
Great, thank you. Any other, so there can be moved over from our expectations. So there's some very procedural guidelines that people often include. Pretty granular. Commitment to being here, depending on showing up. How about respecting time and sticking to the agenda, start and end on time? People want to have that as part of their... Okay, so we'll go with that one. Any protocol about, you know, where we take phone calls, exchange text messages, just to keep people focused on tasks. Sometimes people include things about taking phone calls outside the room. Necessary, not necessary. People okay with that as a... Or don't feel it's necessary. I'm not hearing a sense, so I'm not going to check, put a check mark, and that's already done. And these ones are ones that groups often come up with, and these are more, a lot of these are already incorporated, which is terrific, because in most teams, this is what people find makes an effective and action-oriented group. So it's kind of cool. You guys came up a lot of these already. You know, listening for understanding, one speaker at a time, sharing openly, it's already been mentioned. Testing assumptions. I think that was implied somewhere. But what that basically means is to make sure that we aren't, that we're open to having people testing our assumptions. So example of this might be, I'll use one that I've fallen prey to. There are times where people talk about access to computer access. Well, not everybody has access to a computer. And I say, well, you know, they could go to the library. And then people say, well, no, wait a second, because libraries aren't always located where people need them, and they don't have the hours for people who are working multiple jobs. And I'm like, oh, yeah, bad assumption on my part. So I think for this group that might be useful, but I'm going to leave it up to you. So, you know, I'm open to testing assumptions.
Yeah, I think
that's a good one.
Agreement on meaning important words already in. Focus on interests and issues versus positions and solutions. I think your expression of that is already in here in terms of, you know, seeking common ground and not driving to, you know, the solution that would serve your agency's interests best. So jointly deciding on next steps is also a commonly included guiding principle, because, you know, sometimes you leave a meeting and it's up to somebody else to define the next steps. And most teams that want to be action-oriented go towards jointly deciding on next steps as a context, as a, you know, part of their meeting, as opposed to having it done outside. So do you feel that's important?
Yeah.
Others' views. Explain reasoning. But I'm not sure you need that as a guiding principle here. People do that readily. So I wouldn't necessarily think it needs to be articulated. My experience in the last couple of meetings is that, you know, something you do naturally. Curiosity about other people's views is already
in here. And you are curious.
And relaxing, making the process enjoyable, I think that that goes into the, you know, being open and understanding. Patient understanding, you know, you're giving up time on your Friday morning. This ought to be something that you know, wrestle with, and it's challenging, but at the same time, it should bring you some joy. That's my feeling. You can decide.
At least some bagels.
What's that?
At least some bagels.
At least so are people looking for to have this be relaxed, or are they looking to it for, you know, more dry?
Well, I think part of the value of this group is also making interpersonal connections. So I think that there is definitely a component part of that.
Okay. I could say that's actually peace, but yeah. I want to make sure we get some stuff done.
Okay, great. So we're focusing on. Yeah. And I think that's
you will.
Here.
You will. This is part of the process.
Yeah. Strive for action. Got it.
Strive for action. Yeah.
Okay. So, got it. I think that that's.
Jenny, I think.
I wanted to add something. If, I don't know.
Please.
If you're thinking it was specific enough, but it's that everybody who's part of the group gives feedback about how the group is doing.
So that if we're on target, great. If we're not, you know, sometimes people start having feelings and then they just leave and we don't necessarily know why or whatever. So.
Great. Thank you. Should that be a part of the process? Just like we want to jointly decide on next steps? Do we want to end every meeting with a how are we doing as a group?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jim.
Check in, check out.
Great.
This is terrific list.
There seem to be general assents we are going around the room about these. I will try, you know, grouping them together because some of them are alike or related. Anything here that people feel will be problematic and that we should talk about before we add it to the guiding principles?
One thing that occurs to me is that I think it's very important that we're all sharing our professional selves, but it seems that there's also this personal part that's coming in as well, which I think is good, that we're coming as people and our feelings and values as people as well as our professional roles in the community. I don't know if you all agree, since it seems that there are certain, starting out with the undoing racism thing, there seems to be certain strong personal things coming out of it.
Mm-hmm. Great. So maybe just adapting the sharing expertise to be both personal and professional. Yeah. Wow, that's a great list. Cool. So we'll have those sort of guiding our work. Mm-hmm. My suggestion would be that we have them posted for each meeting so that they know what the guiding principles are.
Nice.
That'll move this organization forward, which is great. One of the next point on our, anybody have any closing thoughts before we move on guiding principles? Again, you know, it's something that I think you should revisit from time to time as a task force. If new things occur to you, that time during feedback where you go, we don't have a protocol for X, or, you know, we have a stumbling block here, let's identify it and incorporate a guiding principle that would help us in the future. So I encourage that kind of openness. Next on our agenda, we've got a few minutes to talk about group membership. We had a brief conversation that answered actually a question for me, because I was curious about what does it mean to be a member here, how do people get invited, and Catherine's, you know, has articulated already that, you know, we want the group to be, you know, a fully representative group, and we want people, it's an open group, so anybody can join in. So I guess that means, Catherine, that people are urged and encouraged to invite people.
Absolutely.
And it would be good additions to this. Yeah.
Just as background for this conversation, we have a fairly extensive mailing list. I think for people who've been here for all three meetings, there has been some, you know, different representation here at one versus another, and some of that's a function of people's schedules. But we were just talking about, have we missed anyone that we should be informing about this, or is there something that is an impediment to some groups participating in the task force, and try to identify what they are?
Yes? At one point, there was an email from Melanie where it listed everybody, and I was amazed at the breadth of the group, and I think I wrote back to Melanie asking, can we have a list of everybody that has been asked to participate? Mm-hmm. And that has not yet been forthcoming. So I don't know really the breadth of the group. One of the things that I care about at a table such as this is we really don't have younger people. And I'm not talking about youth, which I usually do. But that's not what I'm talking about, because I think that we want people that are not as seasoned as so many of us are, because I think they bring very different viewpoints and often are very able to speak out comfortably. And we're all, you know, pretty polite, and I think it's nice. But I tend to sometimes be a little less than polite, I guess, in terms of saying what I feel.
You're getting board agreement from Elfrida.
But what I find is that when I leave the room, people are saying, yes! You know, so I say, you've got to speak out. So I'm encouraging you to try to look for some. I had given you a couple of names at some point. To look for some younger people, because I think it just brings a whole nother enrichment to what you're looking for, what we're looking for.
So to that end, maybe in your organizations or in your purview, you know, if you find someone who meets that criteria, let's try to engage
them. Yeah, a lot of them. Could I ask, is, say, for example, Zoe Colon at the Hispanic Resource Center, was she invited to join
us? She has been invited, okay. Yeah.
She's away this week.
The nerve
of her. That was our
we can send out the whole invite list.
Yeah, oh, we definitely can.
I think we need to know.
I think it's just, you know, it's obviously a set of politeness that you put some people, you know, people into BCC, but that's fine. Yeah.
And you may be able to encourage some of the folks on the list who haven't been here yet to actually
right.
come.
Right. I mean, okay, that makes sense.
So I would say that I think it's great to have, we need to have certain people at the table. We want a diverse group, but how large do we want the group to be? How do we get anything accomplished? And if people, if there's no continuity, then how are we going to get anything done?
Yeah.
Has meeting dates been for the year been determined?
No, however, so we did sort of like the idea of the third Friday up until this morning when we heard that one of our organizations has their staff meeting on the third Friday of the month.
I'm running a little late right now.
Meeting at 10 o'clock.
You're never going to find one thing for everybody. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go back and ask if we can just push off the meeting that starts at 10, you know, till 10:15. But, everybody's got something.
I think we had an initial conversation at our first meeting about Friday mornings actually being pretty decent.
And to that point, I think, you know,
the day of the week.
Yeah.
So maybe in terms of group membership, there might be a more productive, you know, perhaps email exchange about that, if we can get the list out so people can see who has been invited, and then say, oh, you know, how about these people, or if you see, you know, holes that you would identify and have possible candidates for that demographic.
Can I just ask a question? We all have been through a process, I mean, except for a few new people who have come. We've all been through a process now over a period of time to sort of craft and get this thing going. I think if you have people coming and going here one day and not here, I don't know, I just think it's not good.
It's an organizational question. It's a basic organizational question.
It is.
How are you going to move forward a group if you don't have a group? You know,
the group keeps.
I mean, I think it's a basic organizational question that has to be answered.
So criteria for, I think that begs the question about what are the criteria for membership? I mean, that, you know, besides these guiding principles, you know, when we ask people to, you know, to say, can you commit to being here as part of this conversation?
Yeah,
give it to people.
Well, yes, obviously, yes. But I think also maybe there's a little bit of like a distilled debrief of where we've been and what the expectations are that we could, you know, especially now as we're still in the forming stage, we can give to people. So that would probably be a useful thing, even if you're recruiting for some of the, you know, people we see missing here.
Yeah, I think also, as we talk about having representation across all sectors, boundaries, but also, you know, you look at New Rochelle, Yonkers, Mount Vernon, they have, in those particular cities, they have some very stressful concerns. So we want to make sure that we have those communities as a part of the table,
yes,
too.
Absolutely.
So we have specific geographies that we need to think about also. So we have geographies, I think somebody had mentioned earlier that there was no Latino representation at the table. Is that, you know, also? So those are readily, you know, some might identify. So I understand what the concern that you've expressed and you've reiterated, but I think, being that you are in the early stages, I think the bringing people in and briefing them. There had been comment earlier about, you know, should undoing racism be, you know, a highly encouraged training for all new members? That might be something that you put forward as a criteria for membership also. I'm not sure we can solve that in 10 minutes. But
I just wanted to, just in reference to what Frank said, that when we send out the list of everyone who's been invited, other names may come to mind, so please send those forward.
Okay, that's, why don't we handle the membership in that way then? Liz,
there's a group dynamic that happens with just about every group that I've ever been involved with, and that is you're going to end up with a core group of people. And so regardless of how large and how flexible and expansive, inclusively it is, I do believe that there's going to be a core group of people who are going to have this on their calendar that can come, set aside the time to come, and will be here. And I think that happens basically across the board.
I think the challenge in that case is to make sure that you're always like looking outside the group for other voices to inform the decisions.
And that people
that you
read the minutes. You know, I would encourage people reading the minutes at least to know what's happening.
Just on a more sort of prosaic level, the two sectors that I don't see represented here, despite our best efforts, is people from the business community and from the faith-based community.
Right. Well, you had Father Richard, but he's moved on.
We did, moved on, yeah.
Okay, so there's some thoughts for people to focus on in terms of, you know, if you know individuals who are in these, you know, in these areas or demographics or geographies, if you could, you know, put some thought and issue some invitations and bring people into the conversation.
And perhaps just a person who's not connected to anything, who's just a community member.
Like a member of a family?
Yeah.
But then you've heard of me, it's like,
have something to add to the whole.
That'd be great.
Well, there was a father here at the first meeting.
The first meeting,
And he had a lot to say, and I thought it was really valuable. So,
Some
of them are, you know, they can't come.
But you know, we reached out, in order to get that demographic, we did reach out to the sort of service organizations, the PTAs, and the junior leagues. You know, we'll continue to try it in that effort.
Great.
So you're all going to do that?
We should do it as a group.
If anybody says, we can work with you.
Exactly.
Look at the list.
Thank you, Carla.
Yep, I'm already late.
Before
you leave,
love you,
sorry. But if you could, if you have, in the spirit of feedback, if you have feedback, positive, negative, things you'd like to see change, other comments, if you could email them to Catherine, those of you who are leaving now, if you could email them to Catherine and Kathy. No, totally get it.
Thank you.
Next steps, I think we have the encouragement of membership as a next step, and our next steps for the September meeting are already, you know, have been identified, and I think you've all reiterated them as we need action steps. We need to start going forward. So that's what we. Anybody else have other action steps that they'd like to incorporate?
I just
want to
mention the next meeting we've set as September 19th. Ginny is able to join us again. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay. So look forward to that. There are post-its here. If you could take the yellows and write your. Put all the yellows in one direction. Write things that you thought went well. If you could use the blues for things that you'd like to see happen differently, the things that. And if you had specific suggestions for change, there are green neons. and there are pinks for just general comments.
Okay.
And if you could post those before you leave in the appropriate box. Yellows go in the plus. Blues and the minus.
So while people are working on that, I really just want to say thank you so much to you, Ginny. You've brought so much insight into this whole, like, forming piece of our organization. And we're really happy that you've been able to give us your professional expertise in this matter.
Pleasure. It's really fun. That is the prescriptions for change. That's actually green.
Okay.
What would you like, Sally?
Yeah, we have some good things.
Blues for the things you'd like to see not be repeated.
Is yellow
the
one?
Yes.
I got an email.
Sticky.
From
Sticky. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You know, just in that.
Information.
Just for that purpose. So thank you for asking.
No
great.
Charge. No charge. Confirmed. No charge.
Excellent.
For doing racism.
Wow. That is such a boon.
Yeah, that's great. It is.
It is. I'm excited.
Yeah. Thank you, Melanie. It was her tenacity that actually made this happen because we refused to take no for an answer. So,
advocating for our group. Thank you.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Thank you all for an incredibly productive conversation.
Thank you. I'm glad we broke this into two meetings because it took us this whole meeting to do this.
It's an interesting thing. As I said, when we got to the sharing your rationale, you got some answers here.
Yeah.
Great.
You all should have seen the original agenda.
Yeah. We've been here till Monday.
Hopefully not. We want to honor that time.
More bagels required.
Yeah. Actually,
yogurt.
Yogurt. Yeah. Yogurt. Put it in the descriptions.
Is that the
that's green?
That's green. Yeah. I'm still old-fashioned. I have they may be limited in usefulness, but I brought them.
Oh, thanks.
I'll give you a few feedback.
Yeah, please.
A lot of the caregivers felt like it didn't apply to them
because
they're not working.
Okay.
But they have needs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's fine.
And I think I found it a little long to get through.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's very comprehensive. So, see what, I hope it's
okay. We tried to do it originally with like three questions, but as far as being able to use it to affect any policy, you kind of have to know a little bit more about the circumstances now and what people are using.
Nicole get in touch with you to actually come to some of the sessions? I should know this, but
no. If she did offer that, I need to read her emails.
Okay. Great to see you.
And I can offer it.
We don't have a regular.
Then we have a sister program that works with foster families with foster children and pre- and post-adopted families, keeping them stable. So, and some of those are in there. But I'll tell them about it too. Maybe we can do something jointly or
that'd be great.
So we would love to have you call in and add your voice.
And I'm actually also
I love that, preventing the need for people to get to you. I think that's a really great expression. I really like that a lot.
You know, it can go both ways. They can give more surveys, but also they can give their feedback directly and learn maybe a little more about the programs that they would qualify for.
Sure.
They need free programs.
It's tough.
You know what? In general, what the income level is it? I think there's any folks who qualify for Head Start.
Oh, absolutely. They're either most are either poor or very poor by federal standards. If that would be possible, and that's an area that would be very helpful for the children and for the caregivers, and give them some respite.
Right.
That they're not having to spend 24/7 with us. Young children.
Well, we're working with WestCop to put an application for new early Head Start slots. So these are for like little guys, like 0 to 3 or 0 to 4. Different spots all over the county, New Rochelle, Mount Vernon, Yonkers, Peekskill, Austin, whatever. We haven't even submitted the grant yet, but, I think we have a good chance, and it could create, 150 new slots.
It'd be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. Susan, you've gotten very bold, and I love it.
Oh!
Yeah. Carolyn, do you?
Oh, do you guys know each other? Partners.
Yeah. Okay.
Several years.
Now, don't you think Susan's getting bolder?
Well, I've always known her as bold.
I wonder why. I don't know why. But
it suits you. It's great.
I think it's probably a good thing because I've been a leader for years, and maybe it's because of my role in the United Way. But maybe I feel now that I am getting a little bolder. I don't know. Anyhow, I'm very happy to be on this task force. I'm glad that you thought about forming it. We've always wanted to do something like this, but to do it and maintain it takes a lot to keep it going. A lot.
I just wanted to ask you, did you get Pat's message, and were you interested in making a bid on that thing? I mean, I couldn't quite see you doing it, because it's going to be statewide.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or did you even look at it?
No,
or?
I didn't.
Which thing? She's Mary Shaheen, who is the United Way of
yes.
New York State,
yes.
asked Pat for 211 to bid on this project of random samples of child care across the
state.
Oh,
for the market survey.
Maybe. Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think our state organization is going to go.
They are. Okay. So
well,
not you.
I think so. No, yeah. no, not me.
Because
no.
it would just be, you would just be Westchester.
Right, right,
yeah.
right.
Okay.
Right.
So it's not stepping in your field.
No.
Okay. No. I think she's going to look into it. I mean, it sounds like something that would be perfect for 211. Since it's now so across New York State.
Yeah, let me just say that my experience is that one fault with the market survey is that most people who run child care programs don't really know what their costs are. They know what they charge, but they don't know what the costs are.
Mm-hmm.
So to ask about the cost, and no, it's kind of a problem. Because then a lot of them say, you know, they'll say, well, I get paid X number of dollars from DSS. Except we know of a lot of programs that the DSS reimbursement doesn't really meet their costs. So the fact that they say their costs are what their reimbursement is perpetuates, I think, low market rates. We don't need costs. Just something to, you know, keep in mind.
Okay.
There needs to be a kind of an educational piece so that what the respondents give back is actually the answer to, you know, the questions.
Okay. Well, I'll mention this to her, but anyhow, that just the thought came up, and I said, I don't think it's stepping on your toes, because you're going to be doing something for the whole state.
Yeah.
You'd be doing it here in Westchester.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Really good group. I hope it continues to be viable and that, you know,
yeah,
keep people continuing to come.
Yeah, you know, you do have to put in this kind of, you know, beginning work.
Groundwork. I mean,
yeah.
This groundwork really helps to set the group, and it's...
It does. I get impatient with it sometimes, but it is.
But it helps to set the group in its identity, and then when everybody identifies with everybody else as a group, that it can be attacked. So, very
good.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Okay.
It's really hard to let go, but you know you did.
Oh, so you know, I wanted to just mention.
Yes.
You know, we have a group of advocates. Most of them are raising grandchildren. And maybe they can be helpful in some of these efforts.
That'd be great. We'd love to go and talk to them. Do they meet me?
We meet it during the day.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You'd like to come?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because this is an issue that's near and dear to me. I'm sure they would love to be covered.
Oh, you know, there aren't really enough people like that to speak up for kids.
That happens when we get there.
I'll tell you,
it really was inspiring to find out that you can stay at it, saying that there's a need for housing. Many of the kids are stuck. Mm-hmm. They live in housing that's not adequate.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't move because they can't afford it. They're on Section 8 slots or public housing slots. So they may not live there. And she got involved in
the study, right?
Yeah.
And she's great.
She says it's part of the program and how we're advocating.
So that was very exciting. Have you had anybody from one of the housing groups come in and talk? Like Rose Noonan or the
Providence? In different capacities. But that's right.
I see that because I'm on this other group, the Westchester Women's Agenda. And the co-chair in the Public Policy Committee, and we had a call this week about, you know, what are our, you know, what is it we're going to be trying to achieve.
Sorry.